It's been a big week end.
Big weekend. Your cadence really got me there with that one.
It got me too. we recorded an episode of OHAC yesterday, and we spent 3 hours on it.
Oh, lordy.
Yeah, starting at 8 a.m. my time.
Yeah.
So,
I just got to remember that you guys do that in the morning.
Well, the thing is, for the first, half of the episodes that we ever recorded, we always did it in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one where we were, on winter break or something, and the only time we could do it was in the morning. And we were like, wow, that was awful. We're never doing that again.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all left college, and now we can only do it on the mornings, on the weekends. So it's always at, some time between 8 and 10 a.m. on typically Sundays. We did Saturday because that's what we could make work with everything else going on. So, yeah. But, now we're adults, so it works out.
So now you got to suck it up and deal with it.
I mean, it's just, it doesn't even affect us anymore, I feel like.
Ah.
But.
You're just responsible.
Exactly. Something like that.
Responsible for your own actions.
I just realized that I still have the, two special menu items in the show notes from when I tried to, allow that to be kind of automated.
From what?
So, if you look at the show notes...
Show notes for this show.
Yeah. Like, the Google Doc.
Yeah.
Do you see the things that say comic and timestamp?
Oh my gosh, wait, do they work?
Those are still there. I don't know if they still work. Authorization required. So, not quite.
Okay.
I thought
I totally had forgotten about those.
Yeah. I'm now going to see if I can make it run.
Now that we're talking about it, I feel like this has been something that we've ran into at one point, and you were like, yeah, it's not worth my time to fix it.
Probably, but now I'm going to try it anyway and just see what happens. Finished script. It worked. The issue is that I set it up to append to the bottom, and now since we're always a week ahead, the bottom is not where it needs to go. So I would need to edit it and figure out, how to do it differently.
Yeah.
I think when I first started it, given the name of the script, this was for the very short period of time where we were making, different show notes documents for every episode for no good reason. There was a very short period of time where I was like, oh, let's do it like we do it for OHAC. Let's do different show notes for every single episode. It's like, well, guess what? We really don't need that. Since we put so little in here by design.
We're just so chill and efficient.
That's right. That's what it is. I just realized something. Is this still doing what I think it is? Doesn't really matter, but it is. So, another fun fact is for this episode of OHAC, we wanted to talk about instrumental music. So we each brought some pieces of music that we wanted to share with each other. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to be able to play parts of them during the episode so that we could all hear them. So that required me to actually use a piece of software that I bought earlier this year that lets me make very easily virtual audio devices. So I made one that was, my microphone plus Apple Music. And you create that as a single device that shows up to every available application. So currently my selected microphone is not Blue Snowball. It is Podcast DJ. And I just realized that.
Podcast DJ.
Doesn't affect the recording, but if I were to open up Apple Music, which I'm about to right now, and no, the listener is not going to hear this, but Grant will confirm that he can hear what I'm about to play. You ready?
Yes. Podcast DJ is in fact not lying.
Can you name the song?
I might Godzilla actually edit this Las in because
it's the very beginning, but no, we play this in Wind Ensemble.
What? You want to give me the composer?
David Hulsinger.
Oh. No, I don't know. The Ascension or something?
What?
Sorry.
The Ascension? It's freaking jazz.
What? What am I thinking
of? It's jazz sounding. The Ascension is orchestral, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, you're totally right.
No, this is Scootin' on Hard Rock. I just have very fond memories of it.
Do you? I have like very few memories of it, I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, obviously. That's evident. Everyone has their pieces of music that sit well with them, and for me, it's mostly the ones where the percussion part was actually fun.
Yeah. Because we played a lot of music where the percussion stuff, I'm sure, was kind of lame.
Well, the best was, I actually do really like this piece of music, and I'm going to like write this down, that I want to add John Mackey's music to my stuff that I listen to. But Sheltering Sky,
mm-hmm.
Do you remember that one?
Yes.
It's so pretty, and the entire percussion part was, I think, one cymbal roll and a single hit on the bass drum.
Hmm.
So, that was that's one of the few that sit with me. I don't know. I feel like I have a pretty good memory of most of the stuff that I played in Wind Ensemble. I remember.
For me, I feel like it's getting far enough that I don't think I can name things off the top of my head.
Hmm. I think most of the stuff that I remember is actually from junior year, because it was such a it was such a good experience for me. I was shocked that I made it into Wind Ensemble that year. I didn't think I had. I had been concerned about even making Wind Ensemble work in my schedule, so I wasn't even going to keep going. Yeah. And then I talked to Mr. E about it, and he encouraged me to give it a shot. And then I got in, and it was a very formative year for percussion for me. Senior year also was, but it was if I hadn't had junior year, there's no way that what I accomplished senior year would have. So there's a lot of pieces like Scootin' on Hard Rock, like Tempered Steel, Candide, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That just I remember so much of it. The weird Moby Dick one.
Queequeg.
Yeah.
What was the actual piece called?
I don't know, but there were so many movements to it, and I remember my dad told me that he fell asleep during it at the concert.
That's good.
I don't remember what it was called. But yeah, there's a lot. Danzone number 2. There's so much from that year that I still remember. Mm-hmm. And especially, I think Tempered Steel also sticks in my head, because that was the stretch piece for the band that year, or for that first concert. Do you remember Tempered Steel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. I remember the trombone part was really hard.
Yeah, it sucked. But it actually wasn't that hard. It just wasn't that good.
Well, fair. But I just remember being that was a really challenging piece for us. You know?
And, Mark, I will never forget that song, because I feel like multiple horrible things happened to me during it.
Oh?
I'm pretty sure that's the song where... Or maybe it wasn't that song, because it was a different year, I think.
Hmm.
There was a song, maybe it wasn't that song, where I dropped a mute three times in a span of 10 seconds.
Nice.
A single mute, I dropped it. But that one, I had a freaking solo, and I always came in at the wrong time. it was drilled into me at the wrong time.
I remember you having this solo. I don't remember you getting it wrong, but I remember you having the solo.
Oh, I remember getting it wrong every single time without fail, except
It's it's everyone's coming in at different times.
Yeah.
Throughout that whole thing, so it's super confusing. I just remember it because I got to play marimba. No. What did I play during that? I'm getting it confused, because what I was going to say is, before I go back to trying to remember what I actually played, it was that year, that was the hard piece. And then 2 years later, I went to the university band at Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
which was it was the highest band that you could be in without actually being some sort of music major or something like that, you know? And it was the first year that they had held auditions to be allowed into it, as opposed to the other slightly lower symphonic bands. And the instructor that we had was this perfect mishmash of Mr. E and Dr. K. He was just excellent. He was a very vibrant music teacher in his late 40s, finishing up his PhD. Just a swell guy. And Tempered Steel was our easy piece for our concert.
Mm-hmm.
It was the piece where I was oh dang, I remember this being super hard. And then we the band played it down. We probably rehearsed it four times or something, and it was crazy. But I know that one. That first year must have been when I was playing just a bunch of Pots and Pans, actually. Was that what it was? Or am I mistaken with a different piece? Because I think in college, I got to play the part that I... No, that's right. Okay, so I do remember now. Junior year, Ben and I split apart. So one percussion part was marimba and chimes. But trying to transition between those two is really hard, especially for like us at that age. So we split that part. That's what it mm-hmm. was. And then freshman year of college, there was one guy who was a multi-year member of the front line of various drum corps. Or not various. I think he was just on one. I don't remember which one he was on, though. He was great. He played the marimba and chime part just on its own and killed it. And I think I got to play timpani. But either way, I have a fondness for that song as well. The only song I don't have a fondness for. Can you even begin to guess?
Oh, I've got one that pops into my head, but it's my answer, not yours.
Well, I want to know what your answer is.
What's your answer? No, I want to know yours first because you asked.
Oh, Donkey Rhubarb.
Oh, don't you mean the real name, Ronky Dubarb?
It doesn't matter. the crowdsourced piece of music.
That has come up a number of times among other friends.
I've not thought about it for quite a while, actually. It's
come up as like the worst thing we ever did.
Yeah, like it's a... I like the idea of it still.
I do too.
It just like... Wherever that guy got started, it just didn't. He left himself nowhere to go.
It was just...
And he wasn't good at writing for percussion. That was the worst part. His percussion scoring made no sense.
Yeah.
One of our instruments was dropping us a bunch of books.
Heck yeah. That's good, though.
It's kind of hard to do in time.
Yeah. Just because it's challenging for the musicians doesn't mean it's not good.
Okay, so what's your problematic piece?
Friggin' Children's March.
Oh,
I do loathe that March. Piece of music.
I think
so
I
much
played that in the San Diego concert band. I think is actually what I remember. It's like really repetitive, isn't it?
About this, yes,
really
it
repetitive
is horrific.
And kind of boring.
It is so dumb. It is the most annoying
Over
piece of
the
music.
Hills and Far Oak. Percy Grainger. Yes, we did play this in San Diego. Yeah, I don't remember playing it in Wint, but woof.
Yeah, it was... That might have been the year before you were in it.
Okay.
I think it was because of the people we had that year.
Sure.
Yeah. But that's when I learned that I loathe Percy Grainger's music. Most of it. And like, ugh... I just hate it so much.
Yeah, but. I feel like it's of a generation, and we're just
not
happen to
it.
Have band instructors that were
love that crap
in that generation. Yeah. I mean, luckily they also were willing to play things like John Mackey and stuff, like very modern things. I was happy about that. But yeah,
my band director in college, like the first semester, I remember being like, oh, this music's kind of weird. I don't really like the music that, like, music choice we have in this ensemble, whatever. It's not, it is what it is, mm-hmm. sort of deal. And I couldn't exactly place, like, why I didn't like it.
Sure.
And then, like, that winter, we had, like, a holiday thing, holiday team building thing or something, where we just, like, had, like, snacks and stuff, and then played some, like, get to know you game. Going around, people talking about like their favorite composers and whatnot, and it got to her, and she's like, "Oh, my favorite composer by far is Percy Grainger." It just like hit me. I was like, "Oh my god, that's why I hate all the music we've been playing, because it's so like somebody who loves Percy Grainger music."
Who's that guy who composed several songs that all sound exactly the same? They're all very high energy. They're called like Rive and Ride or something like that.
Ride Rush.
Right, yeah, that's what it is.
I was thinking about those.
It's like
Samuel
Hazo.
Hazo,
yeah. Hazo, Hazo.
Yeah.
There it is. That's who I was trying to think of. Yeah, all like they're fun. They're just very samey.
Yeah. Who is the... What's the other Eric Whitaker. That's the other one I was thinking of. Not high energy, but...
I saw Eric Whitaker conduct... the debut of a piece with the Minnesota Orchestra.
Mm.
And the gimmick that was part of it that I still don't understand what was supposed to happen is we were supposed to, I don't remember if we had to download an app or go to a website on our phones, but there was like a certain point in the piece where we were supposed to like be on our phones and do something. I don't know if it was just tap a button or what. I don't know if the expectation is that everyone had their sound on, but I don't remember it having any effect on anything. I'm sure the piece of music itself was overall just fine, but that's what I remember. I also remember him looking like, I don't even know, like what I imagine Dr. K would be like if he was like 35 years younger or something, or like a little bit more hip.
Yeah, I don't think
he's wearing like skinny jeans to conduct the Minnesota Orchestra.
I don't think I'd ever seen a picture of him until just now when I Googled him, and he does not look like what I expected.
Yeah, no, he's like a hot boy composer.
Yeah, something like that. Oh my gosh, wait. Is this a picture of him or just some other dude named Eric Whitaker? Wait. Oh my god.
What?
It's like a Facebook like throwback Thursday picture of him like doing like a high school senior picture or something. Oh my god. And just like the most like high school senior picture, like holding the sweater over his shoulder sort of deal.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He's like a cool dude.
He seems like a cool dude. Yeah. And like, I enjoy his music very much. But a lot of some of the pieces do have a very similar feel to them, certainly.
Yeah.
Hey, he knows what he's good at, and he's good at what he knows. So I can't complain about that.
Definitely more of a John Mackey guy, though.
Okay.
Oh, he also has a very self-serious website now. It's very different than... He has a list of equipment that he uses as of January 2021.
Mm.
And as he says in a parenthetical, in all likelihood, I'll forget to update this for the next 2 years.
Nice.
Almost three now.
At least he's honest.
Yeah. Read about my writing process. Okay, let's see. He's still using an Intel MacBook Pro with... It's going to make you weep. 16-inch MacBook Pro, 2.4 gigahertz, 8-core, Intel Core i9, 64 gigabytes of RAM, 4 terabyte SSD.
Holy bejesus.
An LG 27-inch monitor with a portrait landscape pivot stand. He has 5 things listed under primary speakers / amplification. Uses a bunch of different software. The only one I've heard of is Finale. I don't know any of these other ones. And he uses a Yamaha C3 grand piano as like, well, it says piano / MIDI controller. So I guess it's some weird electric grand piano. What a fella. I know. Okay, here it is. I'm going to send you this post. Or no. What was it? There's this. Is this it? Man, this website kind of sucks. Okay, here we go. I'm going to send you this. You can read this at your leisure. Basically, the point is, like, John Mackey became a composer because he just, like, became a composer. He didn't grow up playing instruments. He, like, used a very old Apple computer that had something called... a program called Music Construction Set. And he just, like, figured out how to become a composer whole cloth, is what it seems like.
What the heck?
Just a rad guy.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah, he's always used a computer to do his composing.
And then press fire on the piano icon. I love that so much. It makes it me feel like it's something out of like a Transformers movie.
Yeah.
Like if there was a composer in a Transformers movie, they would definitely press a button that said fire. Sid Player? Oh my gosh. This is... Did he make the all last... these videos?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Read the final line, the final paragraph just above comments, and we'll just leave it at that, and then we'll move on. You don't need to read it out loud. Just to yourself.
Oh.
See why I like this guy?
That's a good one. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Now I see what you're talking about, Mark. Oh, are all these things that he composed like back in the day or something? What the heck?
Yeah, these are all either... I mean, some of them I think are things that he wrote, but these are also ones that he programmed, like real music, because some of them are like Bach fugues and stuff like that. So I think it's really only the first two are by him, and then the next two and the next three are him using the same tools to put in other famous pieces.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's a real wild one, Mark, I gotta say. You know what else is a real wild one, Mark? Nest Heads by John Allen.
Whoa.
That was not, wait. Oh, yeah, I'm good. Sorry, that wasn't my best segue ever, but we made it here. Got a little kid and, someone must say is probably their mom or something. And so, they're just standing like a, I don't know, some nondescript space, a hallway, a room, who the heck knows? Probably, you know who the heck probably knows? John Allen.
Whoa.
So we start out with little kids saying, "You're saying I can't have toys with lead paint because I might put them in my mouth?" "Yes," the mom replies quite plainly. And the kid pipes back, "And you think that's consistent with calling me the pickiest eater you've ever seen?" And the mom kind of, not exasperated is the term, but quite still standing her ground, says, "It's a paradox." Kid's picky for lead, you know? Mm-hmm. Picking the lead paint off the toys and eating it. He's still picky.
Ha! That's the solution. The paradox has been resolved.
Yeah, stop picking lead paint off toys, you numpty. Just because it tastes sweet doesn't mean it's good to eat.
Oh, man.
That's one of the more eloquent things that I've said recently.
It is. Very, very rhythmic of you. Ah! Sorry, I had to yawn. Grant.
Mocky Mock.
How often do you need to paint things?
Do I need to paint things?
Or how often do
things need to be painted?
How often do you paint things or have painted in the past?
Exceptionally rarely.
Okay. How has it gone?
Well, I'm trying to think if there's modern examples of my painting skills. I feel like the most recent ones are in like some sort of like high school art class or something where it hasn't gone well. Because I don't necessarily have those types of artistic skills very well honed.
Sure.
I'm also thinking back to other times that I've painted things, and often they have come down to spray painting things in non-ideal circumstances and not going ideally because of that. Because sure. I feel like, at least with certain types of painting, like the prep work is like 90% of the actual work. Like if you prep right, you're going to be fine and it's super easy. But if you don't prep right, it's going to be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just have a vivid memory of of spray painting something with less than ideal ventilation. And having never had such neon green snot in my life.
God.
Because gross. We were painting something neon green.
Yeah.
And so, gnarly. Yeah. Painting is not something I've done frequently. It is not something that I really enjoy, so to speak. I wouldn't like go out of my way to paint something. If I could get away without painting it, I'll get away without painting it. Sure. Like, in terms of, like, I build things out of wood, and I desperately avoid, like, painting or anything like that. I avoid finishing in general just because I don't like the process. It's not fun for me.
Sure.
Because it feels just kind of needlessly stressful, and, again, doesn't necessarily play to my strengths all the time. And so even there, like, the whole process of, like, sanding and finishing is something that I, like, my workflow is designed specifically around minimizing the amount of work that I have to do in that sort of a stage.
Hmm. That makes sense.
Like, I don't sand. I avoid sanding at all costs. Hmm. If I can prep something to be, like, finish ready without sanding, I will. Even if it takes 10 times more time and is, like, twice as hard.
So now you've piqued my curiosity because I don't know how that works. So let's just disregard a painting and you can tell me something about woodworking.
So, if you're say you're making like a coffee table or something, and you start from just like raw, like wood, like just wood.
Yep.
And so like you've got, say you've got some process you use to flatten said piece of wood, and it's, say you use like a modern mechanical machine of some sort to flatten the wood so that it is a tabletop. Well, like, that machine probably doesn't leave a very clean surface, and so then that's where sanding comes in. So you sand it to kind of smooth out all of the little bumps and nicks so that it is nice, because when you, if you apply finish to something that is like roughly finished and not sanded, it's going to be nasty.
Sure.
And like rough and like grainy and gross. And so like sanding is the typical thing, and that's what most people do. But one thing you can do is like sandpaper is a modern invention.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go back to before they had sandpaper, they didn't sand because they didn't have sandpaper. And so what they would do is they had like hand plane. So it's a essentially like a chunk of metal with a very, very sharp, well-kept knife blade that sticks through the bottom of it. And so as you run this like block of metal over a workpiece, at the high points, that blade is going to just like nip off the high points of it. And the blade is super duper sharp, so it cuts the wood fibers very, very cleanly. And eventually you do that until like there aren't high points, and it starts taking off just like super, super duper thin shavings all across a surface. And because the knife is so sharp and it's cutting the fibers so cleanly, it actually leaves you a surface that is like smooth enough and clean enough that really there is no reason to sand it, because it is, it's totally finished, right? Like you can have like almost glossy wood surfaces, or like almost partially reflective wood surfaces, because of just how cleanly and consistently the wood fibers are being cut.
Gotcha. I know you've told me about your hand planes before.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know what they did.
Yeah. So
I guess I knew what, in theory, a plane did, but not like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I knew what it did, but not its use, let's say.
Yeah. No, I get you. And so that's the main one. Like, there's also like another technique people use is like scrapers. And so it's like just a piece of metal that you've put a very specific, like, sharpened edge geometry on that allows you to scrape it over the top of a workpiece, and again take off a very consistent clean shaving of wood, leaving like very cleanly severed fibers. Because if you're like sawing wood, you're essentially, you're kind of more like tearing fibers.
Sure.
As you go. And so that's why like a sawn edge looks kind of rough, but if you then plane that edge, it'll be almost like shiny.
Got
if
it.
You have like a very finely sharpened and tuned and set up plane. Or
sure.
a scraper setup, whatever. And so, like, that's most of the reason why I, like, have hand planes and use them, is because I hate sanding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I loathe it.
That makes sense.
If I had to sand everything I made, I wouldn't do woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Why do you hate sanding?
Because it's gross. And it's, like, so it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It is not fun.
Yeah.
Like, there is no gratifying part of the process to me until the end, because it is over.
Sure.
Versus like when I'm like planing a surface, like every single time you like take a pass and like plane off a strip, you get this like very cool like wisp of wood that comes out that's just like every little bit is kind of satisfying, rather than just like, oh, I'm just making some crappy dust that now I gotta breathe in. And like that's really the main thing with sanding, is like sanding is very messy.
Yeah.
And like there's respiratory hazards associated with it. And so especially in the situations where I've been able to do woodworking, those are kind of significantly annoying aspects of it, because like I don't have an area where I can set up, like I can invest in and set up like quality dust collection.
Yeah.
So that means that I would have to be wearing either just like raw dogging it and breathing in wood dust, which would mess me up because I got weak little respiratory system over here.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, I just have like a respiratory system, and respiratory systems don't like wood dust. I can't set one up. So I'd have to be wearing like a face mask all the time, which just like isn't super fun.
Sure.
Or a respirator, I mean. And then it's like dusty and dirty, and like it gets everywhere. So that's why I hate sanding.
That is good to know. I just never really thought about it. Like, I know what my dad has set up in his workshop to deal with things like sawdust.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, certainly not nothing. Tell you that much.
Yeah.
So.
And, like, good dust collection systems are loud.
Yeah.
And I've lived in apartments.
That is true. Well, you know, in, like, weird little side, creepy side garages.
Well, yeah, but, like, it draws additional attention that isn't needed of having a huge blower going whoosh at whatever times you're doing stuff at versus, like, you can kind of stealthily do, like, hand tool woodworking a little bit.
Do you need to be stealthy about your woodworking?
I don't need to, but I enjoy not drawing attention to myself.
That's fair.
Yeah, because then people will start asking you for stuff. It's like why if you own a welder, you never tell people you own a welder or that you know how to weld, because then they'll start asking you to weld stuff for them.
Is that true, Grant, huh?
That's definitely a thing. It's definitely a thing.
Okay. Grant has brought Chuckle Bros by Brian and Ron Boychuk. We have someone, a business owner, standing at a front door, hands on his hips. The door is open. Calling in, gosh darn it all, honey. I'm already late, and now I can't find the keys to the van. And on the van in the driveway, to complete the visual gag here, the van says, Carl's Clutter Cleaners. Quote, we organize your life so you don't have to.
Ha. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Mark.
Hi.
I don't think we've done this recently. I don't know if we've ever done this. Mark, how organization? Organizing.
Yeah.
How?
How?
Well, what are your thoughts on this in general? Like, do you like it, you don't like it? Feel like you're organized, unorganized, disorganized, whatever. Or for you, what does organization mean? I asked you a lot of questions, so you can choose whichever ones you want.
Can we organize these questions better?
No, I cannot.
I think that organization, roughly speaking, tends to fall into either visual organization or conceptual organization. And it's very nice when the two of those actually overlap, but I think a lot of people get too hung up on one versus the other, more often on visual organization, when conceptual organization is like what's actually useful.
Can you describe that a little bit more?
When I mean visual organization, I just mean literally the appearance of clutter.
Okay.
You can get rid of clutter and give the appearance of things being organized because things are in places, right?
Yes.
They have been put into places that people say, hey, you can put things here. And then things have been put there. Yes, and things have been put there. And then the places where people say you shouldn't have things there, there are no things.
Okay.
And so there's an appearance of organization. It's visually organized, but if you dive into it, there's no actual organization. The conceptual organization, the like actual organization of the things is chaotic, right? It's not that helpful to get rid of clutter if the clutter all ends up in the same bins, because then they're just going to end up all over the place again anyway, because then you're trying to like go through those bins and then you're digging stuff out. Both metaphorically and literally physically, we're talking about stuff in your house. All this to be said, I enjoy having things organized. I think it's good to have organization, to have a sense of order in the things that you do and the things that you own, but I don't get too hung up on it, you know? I think that because of the work that I've done now over the last several years, I'm less focused on like the organization of individual things and more like focused on, do I have a process for dealing with it?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you can organize things once, but then if you don't have a way to keep them in a way that you are okay with, it's not going to stick, ever. So you want to be a little bit more focused on the, how do I get to that point, and how often do I revisit it to make sure that I maintain it at a comfortable level? Because it's not going to be perfect. Order does not just happen. Order has to be maintained, you know? And how do you go about maintaining it?
Your phrasing of that last statement just makes me giggle. Because it sounds like something from some, like, dystopian team drama.
I know. But the nice thing is that objects are not people, so you can treat them with disdain and with an iron hand, you know, an iron fist, and they'll be okay. So that is roughly my take on, like, the concept. I think I'm moderately organized. You know, I can explain how I do things. I think I'm better at being organized with digital things and physical things overall.
Mm-hmm.
That's just where my comfort level is. I can, it takes less work, to be honest. But even so, in the sense of I know where my things are, right? There's that level of organization. The common refrain of, like, you may not be happy with where that thing is, but if it's there, I know that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I think the way that I organize things, like, let's say in the house or on my desk or whatever, is, you know, Aaron and I roughly have the same understanding of where things should and shouldn't go. So I mostly follow the visual organization. And if I'm not following it, we're both probably breaking the same rules about, like, oh, something got left out for a little too long. You know, we should have put that cup away. We should have hung up our jackets, whatever, that kind of thing that just sort of happens over the course of a week. I don't think I'm, you know, bad about it at all. So, but I know where my things go. Like, I don't often lose things. If I'm unsure exactly where something is, because it's been months since I've looked for it, I have a pretty good sense of, like, two places that it could be, you know? So we'll see how that changes over time. Right now, we're just in an apartment, so the options are limited in terms of where things could possibly be. Over time, I hope that whatever my current approach is that I couldn't really state is scalable. We'll find out.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like, if you ask me, like, oh, what's in that random drawer under your desk? I could be like, oh, I know the things that are in that drawer, roughly speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. I have a quick follow-up question, specifically as it relates to the storage and organization of clothes, because as you were talking, it just made me think of something. Okay. Can you just, like, list places where, in your life, clothes are stored?
Now, I'm curious, are we talking about my clothes or just clothes?
In your life.
I do live with someone, so this matters. I just need to tell me what you want from me.
I feel like...
I can answer it both ways if you want, I guess.
I don't necessarily want you to call out somebody else who didn't consent to this line of questioning.
No, Erin's not doing anything wrong with how she stores clothes. It's just that Erin has more places that she stores clothes. So if you ask me, it's going to be a pretty short answer.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I'll take both answers.
Okay, so I'll just lay it out. What we have in our apartment, okay? In the broadest strokes, there's a dresser in the bedroom. There's a closet in the bedroom. There are various coat hooks around.
Oh, hooks. I forgot about hooks.
And then there's under the bed.
Oh, right? Okay.
So the dresser is Aaron's. Full stop.
Oh.
When we moved in, I bought a dresser. She uses the dresser. The closet, right? I have the height of the closet, but only about 2 feet of the width, because I have one of those, like, hanging organizers, right? That's, like, kind of straight in the middle of the closet. It's accessible when the doors are shoved all the way to, like, the far side. You know, there's this carrier or the organizer. It has 5 or 6 slots. Actually, I can go through this. The top one is exercise shirts. The second one from the top is just, like, more regular shirts. Then there's one with a bunch of socks and undershirts. And then there's underwear. And then there's like athletic shorts. And then Aaron uses the bottom most one. So whatever that ends up us up with is like six or something like that. So that's almost all of my clothes, except for some of the clothes that get hung up, like my suit, dress shirts. Like, I don't have many of those, but those sorts of things get hung up. And then on the top shelf, like the wire rack, you know, that's on the top of lots of these like inbuilt closets. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
On top of there, on the far left side are like some spare pillows and stuff that just takes up some space. It's not the dresser takes up some of the like easily accessible area to the closet. So most of the time we have like the closet doors all the way to the left. So it's mostly the right half of the closet that is our like frequently usable space.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the top left is just like extra pillows, just random stuff that we don't really need. Basically above my area is where I store like my jeans and my nice shorts and a few quarter zips, stuff like that. And then every other part of the closet, like most of the hanging part of the closet is for Aaron's, like the entire right side, right of my organizer is Aaron's hanging stuff. We split probably about half of the left side of the hanging area, I would guess. She has like a shoe organizer. I put some of my shoes there, but she has more shoes than I do. So that's on like the floor. And then the top right of the closet, just past where I keep my jeans and all that sort of stuff, is all of her sweatshirts and sweaters and stuff. And then the only thing that I do slightly differently, because I need space for, is right underneath my desk, actually, on top of a pile of like other things. Like I have like an old computer here and stuff. That's where I keep my baseball clothes.
Okay. Okay.
It's just kind of where they ended up. So.
Okay. I promise. Final follow up question. Because mm-hmm. there's a place that tends to be used for clothes storage in my life that I didn't hear you mention. That I'm curious about if this concept is something that makes sense to you or is out of left field.
Okay.
So, like you, or like in your life, I have a dresser. And I have a closet where things are stored. I also have mm-hmm. the chair.
Ah, the chair.
Is this concept something you're familiar with, or is this weird to you?
I mean, I think I understand what you're getting at. I will say that, in theory, I actually do use a chair, but it is for temporary holding. Basically, every single night, I put out what I'm going to wear the next day.
Okay.
And I put that on my office chair. Because most mornings I'm getting up before Aaron. I'm going like out to the living room. And so it's just easier if I have the clothes that I'm going to wear. I can just like grab them and then like go to the bathroom and, you know,
yeah.
get on with my morning. So, okay. But I don't do like, there's no permanent storage there.
Mm-hmm.
We also don't have a chair in our bedroom, so it would make it tough.
Ah.
Other than my office chair, which I do need most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for enlightening me about clothes storage.